You're listening to the Franchise Podcast Network, presented by Lucky Star Casino. KRXO-FM and KRXO-HD Oklahoma City, a product of Tyler Media, reaching over 1 million Oklahomans every week. Now, the Outdoor Hour, giving you the inside scoop on the great outdoors on 107.7 The Franchise.
As long as I can remember, I've been drawn to the outdoors. There's something primal in each of us that awakens when we step outside the bounds of modern society and back into the vast possibilities of the natural world. The more civilized our lives become, the louder our hearts cry for reconnection with our native ways. Failure is imminent, dangers drawing nigh, but approached with reverence and tact, the outdoors return wisdom and gain. In both the outdoors and in life, harvests are fleeting, but lessons and memories abound. With that in mind, we step forth boldly together in pursuit of ourselves outdoors. We are nothing more than tree stand troubadours. Welcome inside the Outdoor Hour. Hot start this week. Josh is back in studio. What up?
What up?
Man, you have had some world travels as of late.
Dude.
Where were you last week?
I was in the Keys.
Again?
Filming. I was there for like 11 days. Filming the World Championship offshore boat racing.
We've talked about this. We need to do an episode just on the boat racing stuff, but I'm starting to get more and more of an appreciation for it just based on what you're posting on Instagram. It's pretty rad.
Dude, we won't get into it today, but Sunday World Championship Day, final race. That series, that whole week, it acts differently than the other races throughout the year. So every race, the points of that race, they get tallied up. And so because of the hurricane, Wednesday got canceled. So they raced Friday. And then Sunday's race always counts for double points. It's intended to be the tiebreaker. So if, you know, someone did really well the first two races, another one didn't do as well but was still up there in points, like, this is your chance, right? Well, Sunday was gnarly. Like, four-footers. And these dudes are humming 120-plus miles an hour. One boat snapped in half, literally. It was bonkers.
I saw a clip of one flipping, capsizing.
He got cut off. So in Key West, here's the other thing. In Key West, you don't have to maintain your lane. So this is the only race of the year where you don't have to maintain your lane, and it's up to drivers, like, do you think you can hit that turn that way? And so in any of the other races throughout the year, that would have been a penalty. There's like referees, if you will, in the air in one of the helicopters. But in Key West, it's go for broke.
There's no rules in Key West.
So Sunday, given that the race on Wednesday was canceled, man, if you didn't have a great day on Friday, like, that's your last race until next March. So it was like, if we're just going all out, we're either breaking ourselves, breaking our boats, or a combination of the two.
Yeah.
And it was one race in particular, the 700 series race and the Mod V race. Both of those races were arguably like the two best races I'd seen all year. I mean, the action was unbelievable, head-to-head. Full gas, like, and for reference, the 700s don't have a canopy on them. They're open air boats, and these guys are full send. I'm talking jumping wakes, skyrocketing into the sky, going 100 miles an hour, and just, I mean, absolutely just getting smashed on. It was unreal. It was a super rad day of racing. But yeah, it's not something I ever thought, and I tell them this all the time. I'm like, I'm the most anti of what you guys do. I want people to go into nature and not have any of the natural things. I don't want to hear your engines. I don't want any of that. And so I've been very hesitant about the sport. Like, I love the racers that I've gotten to know and their families, and I mean, this is a multi-generational sport, as you can imagine. Not that many people are offshore boat racers. And so they're really wonderful people. but like the culture is not something I've really like found myself into, or I'm like, oh yeah, like there are people who travel just like NASCAR to go to these races. And I guess if you're going to watch something take left-hand turns, you might as well do it on a beach, not in a stadium. So that's kind of cool. But, yeah, I have a whole new appreciation after this week of, like, these guys really just absolutely laying it on the line. And got to see guys that I've developed friendships with over this year become world champions. So that was super cool to see. Mm-hmm. And at Key West, they give an award to the team. So X Insurance, who is our friends and client, they actually have 8 boats underneath their roster in a variety of different classes. And there's an award that goes out to the team that made the most positive impact in the sport in the year. And they won that this year, and that was super cool to see. And so, yeah, I mean, it was a great week. Wish I could have got out and fish, but weather was not allowing that. And but, yeah, saw some cool stuff. Watched boats go fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Check out @against_current on Instagram if you want to see a little bit more of that. I enjoyed kind of following along with your travels through the last couple of weeks. Here in Oklahoma, the rut is going on. Bucks are chasing does. I mentioned, I think, in a text conversation, we've knocked down 3 good deer in the last, like, 3 weeks out on the lease.
There have been some good pictures all around the state. Seems like people are having a good time. And I want to say, I think even more people are hunting due to the current state of both OSU and OSU's football programs, which leave you a lot to be desired. So you might as well be in the woods chasing animals.
I was actually thinking about this earlier today. If only there was this game, really big game at the end of the year where both of them could play each other, and then maybe that could make them feel better about their seasons.
OSU and OU?
Yeah, like,
well,
I wonder.
Someone's soft and doesn't want to play anymore, so they have to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
cool.
They have to.
Cool.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, wouldn't that be a great idea, though? And you know what? We could call it Bedlam.
That's got a ring to it.
Thank you.
You should try to, like,
you know,
trademark that or something.
I'm going to workshop this and get back to you guys.
Yeah, workshop.
You might
with
have
your friends.
Something there. Also ongoing in the state, it's now duck season in Oklahoma. It's been pretty warm, though. I don't know that we are having many birds around here.
The only people that I, you know, consistently follow is, you know, Josh and them over at Falco.
Yep.
And they had some decent days so far, for
have
sure.
They?
Yeah. Kay. I think the cooler weather the last couple of days has been beneficial. All the snow they're getting up north, I mean,
it's going to push. Yeah.
Yeah. Last week, the Panhandle, Oklahoma got 18 inches. Get out of here. Like, that's awesome. So hopefully we'll have a much better year than the last couple of years. On that note, we should probably introduce someone smarter than us as it relates to ducks.
We should. Let's make the rounds.
Oh, you mean we should start the show officially?
We should do this.
Weird.
We're only, what, 8 minutes in or something at this point. This is the Outdoor Hour. I'm Taylor Maples.
He is, but...
We're out of practice. No, this computer did not.
And you know what? You don't get an intro this week, so...
This is the Outdoor Hour. I'm Taylor Maples. I just shot a bear.
I did.
Yep. I saw a bear someone shot. I almost took a picture of the skull when I was in Alaska because it makes yours look like a baby.
Those Kodiak bears they're like Volkswagen.
Dude.
Those skulls.
Casey, it was one he got last year. And, it was... on the coffee table, the skull, and then he had the hide on his wall, and golly, it was enormous.
Did your kid shuffle his feet all over that one too?
I know, because it was on the wall, and my child was not with me.
Back in the studio, that's Joshua Wildman Stratton.
Wildman Stratton.
Yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, you talk smack on my kid, them fighting words.
I felt that. I actually did feel that. Does Goldfish get an intro this week?
Yeah.
Does he?
Hey, that wasn't my fault, okay?
I'm still a piece of garbage.
Yeah, 100%. You know what?
on the ones and twos.
Hello, I'm a piece of garbage.
No, you are not.
You are not, Goldfish.
That's always Maddie Goldfish.
Extra cheesy.
I love that Goldfish.
Yes, absolutely.
Man.
And we're only 20 minutes in. Let's introduce our guest.
Let it go.
Yeah, that's happening.
Let it build.
Salt Creek Duck Club, represented in the studio on the Outdoor Hour. The one, the only, Keenan Taylor is with us this week.
How's it going?
What's up?
Glad to be here.
Man, you have no idea what you signed up for.
No.
When you agreed to be friends with this guy, and then when you came on the radio show.
So it's funny when you mention that. We're at a birthday party. Our kids go to the same school, and you were talking about what he was wearing earlier.
Yeah.
And where our kids go to school is not the normal of attire, but this guy walked in. I'm sitting there, and here's these short shorts and extra tough shoes, and I'm like, any other guy would be like, I don't know about him. Like, we can be buddies. So I just like make my way over and sit next to him. Like,
it is. It's a polarizing look for sure.
You're either into it or you're not. You know. Yeah.
Man. So I kind of threw some shade out there. I don't feel like I've seen many birds. Have you seen any birds this year? What does the duck world look like this fall?
I mean, the green's not down yet, but I mean, we've seen a lot of gadwalls, a few pintail, a lot of wood ducks this year. I think they're making their way down. The rains last week, oh my gosh, it saved it.
Yeah.
It saved it.
Yeah.
So I have some buddies with some properties down in southern Oklahoma, and they got 2.5-3 inches of rain, but not having rain for 6 months, nothing pulled.
Right.
So the numbers down there, what I've heard's not the best. So, I think we're off to a good start in areas. But
Do you guys do anything during teal season?
Yeah, a little bit. I have a buddy who has a property about 6 miles downriver from me, has just an established marsh. We drain ours every year. So we don't start pulling water I started pumping a week before we got the rain. So we were empty, but he has an established marsh, and it just stays full of water, and he has pretty good teal numbers, and I just kind of sneak into his property.
You know, I've not ever been big on the teal season, but they are a ton of fun.
Yeah.
When you do get after them, they're like little fighter jets, you know, F-16
so
things. They're fast. They just do this all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
To me, there's hardly anything better, you know, than a greenhead cupped and wobbling coming into a spread like that. But watching those teals just blast around the place, it's cool. I have a huge appreciation for it, for sure.
Yeah.
On that note of a cupped greenhead, Turtlebox released a new Turtlebox, and my boy Ed Anderson is the one who did the artwork for it. And I had to jump on there and get one.
Did you?
The house. I did, yeah.
I saw that, actually. You may know this. I've been fighting the urge to get a turtle box for months because I want one to go on my drift boat. And
it's a must-have.
Yeah, and I've been resisting because I've got Bluetooth speakers. I don't really need to spend the money on that for that. But I saw that over the weekend, that Ed Anderson, it is a Mallard Drake
on the back
of it. And I was
up.
Like, oh. Might end up pulling that's the trigger cool. on that.
Yeah,
one.
Limited edition, so I don't know how many they're doing, but
okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, I definitely jumped on there. And the proceeds go to Delta Waterfowl, so it's a win there.
Very cool.
Which is why I was like, all right. One, it's Ed.
Yeah.
And two, goes to a nonprofit. You got me.
Yeah.
Hook, line, and sinker, you jerks.
There's a sales opportunity there for sure.
Yeah, so mine's shipped, so I'm
good
excited.
For you.
Yeah.
Well, let's do this. Let's squeeze in a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk more with Keenan about Salt Creek Duck Club, the property, what you guys are doing, what it's about, why you've excluded this guy for...
Why I'm banned, why there's a picture of me that says not welcome. Let's jump into dogs, too.
Oh. Yeah.
Because he's got some thoughts, some ideas, some things...
Yeah.
About dogs?
What is your breed of preference for dogs?
I run American Labs.
Ooh.
So just high-powered black labs.
Okay.
Or white. But
We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can see the sparkle in your eye. You
This
we
is
stood,
a sleeper.
We stood in the middle of the street at carpool a couple weeks ago having this conversation, dodging cars. So
he told me, hey, I got a guy who's going to come in and talk ducks. What he failed to mention is I'm going to spend the whole time talking about dogs because I know that's what's happening on
that
the other side.
That is what duck hunting means, sir. When someone says they're a duck hunter, what they're telling you is I'm a dog person.
This is the Outdoor Hour. We'll be back with Josh and Keenan and myself after this on 107.7 The Franchise.
You're listening to The Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside The Outdoor Hour. Taylor Maples, Joshua Stratton.
Yep. Wild man.
Wild man. And Keenan Taylor. American Labs.
American Labs, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He said British lads are soft and they don't go hard enough for him.
They're slow. They're slow. They like to prance, kind of trot in the water and look pretty. And
they do look pretty.
They are pretty. They're a prettier lab, in my opinion. Big blocky heads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I need something that jitters a little bit on the stand, you know. And
angsty.
His are edgy, boy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They kind of remind me of your dog.
Don't talk smack about my dog, and I won't talk smack about your kid. How's that sound? So I've got a lab mix.
Okay.
With what I have no idea. Come on, man. So we got a COVID puppy, and we thought it was a Labradoodle. But it was your eyes just told the whole story right
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
We got a Craigslist Labradoodle.
Oh, buddy.
And a few weeks in, we were like, I think it's just a lab, which I was cool with. I was like, all right, I'm going to train it to hunt. I've kind of always wanted a lab. I grew up with, like, upland bird yeah. dogs. You know, we had Brittany's, and my grandpa had German Shorthairs. And
your dad still has Brittany's, right?
Yeah, they still have one now.
Yep.
So for a couple of months, we were like, I think this is just a lab, really pretty chocolate color. You know, so I started doing some basic hunting training with him. Literally, this is so bad. You know how you can search in your phone? When I search for dog, my dog doesn't often even come up. So if you saw this dog, you would think that it was just, like as a puppy, you would think that it's just going to be a lab. But then it basically grew into a fire hydrant is the best way to describe the shape of this thing. We think it is a lab basset hound. Check out the front
yeah,
end there.
The yeah, nozzle he's, is kind of...
It looks like a shackled up hot rod. His back legs are longer than his front legs, so he kind of runs downhill everywhere he goes. And his feet turn out all goofy. Turns out he loves swimming, though, so...
Which is that new thing.
That is a new... Yeah, in the last... But when you see him, like, at the end of the hallway, he looks like his legs are crossed because his front feet turn yeah. out so bad. When he runs, we call it egg beaters. They just kind of go in opposite directions.
So it's like that all the time. It just
how, oh, yeah. No, that's just how it
that's how
very
he
much like a basset hound. How basset yeah. hounds, their feet are supposed to angle out to make room for their chest because their legs okay. are so short.
But he's huh. got this big old barrel chest and tiny yeah, little front thick. Legs, kind of T-Rex arms.
He's funny.
65 pounds, tiny wow. little just fire hydrant.
Yeah, he's
the
super,
best dog.
Yeah, he's super nice dog.
The best dog.
Good.
But
so,
yeah.
We were afraid to swim with him for the first few years of his life because honestly, I didn't think he was buoyant enough to actually be able to swim. Like just a dense.
Does he
animal.
Have the webbed feet too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyways, but American Labs, that's really cool,
yep.
man. It's,
yep.
And I knew you were legit when I said, oh, what kind of breed? And you said American Labs, not just Labs. Like, that's a true waterfowler when you have a preference on
yeah,
origin in that way.
And I'm not an expert in anything. I'm more, maybe that's why I like duck hunting and having a property. It's an inch deep and a mile wide kind of take on things. And, you know a little bit about a lot. And dogs are one facet of that. And I'm probably more of an American guy because that's what I was introduced to when I started duck hunting. But. I mean, there are some really cool English labs out there. My partner actually prefers those on my
yeah.
property, and
where do his come from?
Southern Oak.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So the conversation we were having in the street.
Yeah.
Yeah. Old Barton.
Yeah.
So how did you get into this world? Did you grow up waterfowling or?
No. I mean, we farm and ranched out in western Oklahoma, so, you know, we deer hunted. I'm a crop consultant by trade, and so I was at a kind of a get-together with some friends, and they, when Kyle Sanders was 737, bought his property, a bunch of us went out there and rode ATVs one day, and he's just walking the rounds. What do y'all do? And, you know, I'm a crop consultant. He's like, I need to talk to you. And so I went out there and pulled soil samples and looked at his soil fertility and kind of, you know, what are some ideas we could grow for crops for ducks and or how to better grow his crops for his ducks. He had some issues with some things. And, yeah, we just became friends that way, and I started hunting out there, and actually I fought it because he's like, hey, why don't you just come hunt with us, you know, and I'm like, I'm just kind of a deer hunter, and you know, no, I'll just give it a shot, and that was cool. When I went out there, I was hooked from then on out.
What was it about it that first time that got you so hooked?
Probably just the camaraderie. I mean, a bunch of guys in the blind, because when we duck hunted, you know, in high school, it'd just be two or three guys. We'd go sit next to a pond. It was cold. We'd shoot three ducks and just pack up and go home. And half the time, we had a fishing pole. We didn't even have a dog. And, you know, I'd seen pictures of pit lines and stuff like that. And then when you're in there and, you know, we're passing around coffee and just having a good time and shooting a lot of ducks and all greenheads. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was addicting.
What's your favorite kind of duck to shoot?
Probably, I like greenheads, but pintails are pretty.
Yeah.
So I like a good pintail in there.
You said you were seeing some pintails.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
We used to shoot a lot of pintails. I went to school in Alamosa, Colorado, part of the Central Flyway there, southern part of the state. Protected area. I know you just went on a sandhill crane hunt,
yes,
right? I want to talk to you about that. But this is part of their, like, migration area. And so they were protected. You couldn't shoot the cranes. But, man, just by the millions, it felt like flying overhead. But we had a ton of pintails, a lot of gadwalls out there, plenty of greenheads as well. I've only ever seen a wood duck with my eyes one time.
Oh, really?
And it was since we moved to Oklahoma about 7 years ago. But that's something I haven't gotten into. I would love to. I have this, like you're saying about the pit blinds and the whole, you know, experience that you've maybe seen on social media. I've never hunted flooded timber before. And I've got this idea of, you know, wood ducks coming into the timber. And that's kind of one of my bucket list duck things I would like to get to do.
Yeah, that's fish in a barrel. I mean,
yeah,
there's nothing like hunting flooded timber. I mean, just they just walk up in front of you and then you start shooting and they're just trying to get out of the hole. And it's like everything just freezes. And oh, it's cool. It does not get better than that.
I see, again, on social media, you've got, like, the platforms that your dogs get to perch on, so they're staying out of the water until they go retrieve, and it just looks like it's such a cool environment. And to your point about the camaraderie and the duck blinds, I was new into deer hunting when I moved here. I grew up, you know, duck and goose hunting out west. The isolation of sitting in a deer stand was something I really had to get used to.
Yeah.
Because I was used to having a cigar and a cup of coffee and a buddy and a joke and just kind of, hey, shh, here come the birds, you know. So getting used to the big game stuff was so different for me. But that, I think, is the one common thread amongst duck hunters. You can just see it in their eyes when they start talking about, there's something about sitting in a duck blind with your buddies, guys, girls, whoever's out there, breakfast. It's a whole mood for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You had a friend's dad the other day posted a little meme, and it was like, what's worse than sitting in a duck blind when it's raining? It's not sitting in a duck blind when it's raining. So it's true, man. You just forget about everything when you're in the duck blind. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a really good point. I've heard that said before, too, that waterfowlers, I mean, the worse the weather gets, the better it is. And the guys that are tried and true, you long for the crappy, rainy, sleety, windy days out there.
Yes.
Hey, we're going to squeeze in a break. We'll be back after this.
Now, back to the Outdoor Hour with your hosts, Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside the Outdoor Hour, chatting with Keenan Taylor from Salt Creek Duck Club this week.
Yeah. What's one of your best days?
Oh, gosh. One of my best hunts?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we were at 737 one time, and I'd never been on a true gentleman hunt. And all green heads, 70 degrees, 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and just all day long, and they're dive bombing in. We did a gentleman's hunt. We just took turns, just your turn, next guy, next guy. And, we shot a four-man of mallards, and I know everybody's take on that. You know, we did our four-man in an hour and a half, but it was like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And that was the best I'd ever been on, and we just, after it, just sat there and watched ducks flying the rest of the day. But that one sticks out. So that was pretty good.
How do you feel about, and I don't want you to have to step in anything here, but I feel like there has become so much pressure in this part of the country on people coming into the state to hunt. I'm in a number of social media groups, you know, Duck Hunters of Oklahoma and things like that. And there seems to be a real tension between local hunters that are trying to hunt even public land and people that are paying to come in on leases and with guides and that kind of stuff. How have you watched that dynamic kind of change since you've been doing this? And what's your take on all of it?
Yeah, so I do have opinions, and I'm going to step on people's toes. But, I mean, when we were in high school, farmers would beg us to geese hunt. I mean, they were eating wheat fields. And I feel bad for the high schooler who's trying to get into this, and they can't hunt anywhere. Everything's leased up. I mean, I'm a crop consultant. I scout a lot of acres of wheat and other crops, but there's very few of my farmers I can even hunt on, you know, if I ask, because the ponds are leased up. I mean, I know it's a business, a lot of these outfits have just scooped in and are leasing everything up. And so that makes me feel bad for the guy trying to get into the sport. As far as out of staters, I mean, I don't hunt much public, so I'm not well versed on that, but I mean, I see the boat races online and, you know, in Arkansas when everybody lets out, and it's the Wild West. And then we're sleeping in your boat. I mean, I always thought that would kind of be cool to go out to a hole the night before and sleep in your boat. And so you have your spot. I've just never really done it, but I mean, it's competitive, and I, you know, if any duck hunters are on here listening, I mean, we're on the Ducks Hunters of Oklahoma page on Facebook, and they're pretty rough on each other. And I really wish they would tone it down a little bit and help each other more. And the whole scouting thing, well, you know, is there any ducks up there? I'm 3 hours away. I mean, it's like, put fuel in your pickup, and they just start hammering. I'm like,
oh, it's ruthless.
It's ruthless.
Yeah. I saw a post over the, I think it must have been over the weekend, last, my days are all running together. Season's been open about a week now, right?
Yeah, Saturday.
Okay, less than a week. Somebody made a post about, you know, there are 80 trucks in the parking lot today
when I
pulled in. And I'm like, man, I hope that's an embellishment a little bit, but it may not be.
I doubt it. I mean, you see pictures and then there's podcasters who just do public land and then, you know, they'll tell where they're at and then so everybody's flocking there and people are getting upset with that. But I mean, I don't know. I'm more in it for, you know, we're in this together and they're saying the duck hunter numbers are down. I don't know where they're getting this information because, I mean,
it doesn't feel that way.
No.
When you're out in the field, right?
No.
And we talk about this a lot, Josh, but we're certainly not doing a lot to welcome people into this community
No.
of duck hunters.
or anywhere in the outdoors.
Right.
You know, yeah. I guess we can let the cat out of the bag, you know, a little bit here. Like, you know, I've moved on from the Mule Deer Foundation and, you know, still a great organization, and excited for them to get a chapter going here in Oklahoma, and look forward to supporting those causes. But maybe the handcuffs are taken off a little bit. I mean, the reality is the hunting industry is not a welcoming place. And all these people want to sit around tables all year round and talk about, you know, at all these conferences, and it's real simple. Stop being the problem.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's pretty simple. I mean, if somebody wants to drive 3 hours to come hunt, let them in your group, you know? I mean,
do you have kids?
I do, 7 and 5-year-old.
Okay. That's something that we talk about as a common thread here as well. I've got a 2-year-old and one on the way, and he's got young kids. As we try to get out there, I think waterfowling is a great way because it is kind of a accessible place to get kids in the outdoors. Generally speaking, the use of firearms is more predictable. You know, you're not walking through a field of Milo or something with people swinging. It's a little more contained. It's controlled. You know where your kid's at. You can keep them close. My earliest endeavor in the outdoors as a young kid was on the Snake River in Idaho duck hunting with my dad. And so I do have those memories. How many of those people that are asking for scouting tips on the Facebook group, and there's a million of these groups. That's just the one that we've named here because it's top of mind. But how many people that are in these groups are looking because, hey, I'd like to get my kid out in the outdoors? And does that change your perception of, I have to ask myself and look myself in the mirror. If I see somebody saying, hey, I'm driving down from Missouri for the weekend, where are the birds? Do I feel differently about that post than, hey, I'd really like to get my 5-year-old in a duck blind for the first time. You know, can anybody help put me on some birds?
Yeah.
And I have to look myself in the mirror and say, I probably feel differently about those two posts. But why?
Because you're a jerk.
I think it's human nature, right? I really think it's normal.
See, and that has never been part of me. And maybe it was just how I was raised. Being raised not as a hunter or a fisherman, but being raised as an outdoorsman first. These public ground sanctuaries that, you know, my father was taking me into to teach me the life lessons he wanted me to learn, the challenges he wanted me to face. You know, we were very much a leave no trace family, pack it in, pack it out, a lot of respect. And a reminder that what we're seeing today, someone else gets the chance to see tomorrow. This isn't yours. And so don't act like it is. And then I think that got probably magnified when I became a fly fishing guide, was the jerks on the river. You know, being a first-year guide and dealing with the hierarchy, if you will, of, oh no, that's my stretch, that's where I take my clients, you're not welcome here. You know, my response to that was like, okay, fine, I'll go find somewhere else.
But it's a lot to have to navigate.
But it's disrespectful.
And it's not exclusive.
Yours. Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because if you think that it's territorial there, go get in the salt game. The saltwater game is, in particular in the early 2000s in Florida, on the west coast of Florida, was like cut gas lines, pour sugar in your gas tank territorial. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was bonkers, absolutely wild. And I understand the threat from the OG guides. Like, you know, I was very blessed to, and this isn't me talking, like, their accolades, history, and awards says this, are arguably some of the greatest saltwater guides that are currently operating. And they came up the old way, right? There wasn't GPS. They're not buying pins and numbers off of people to start a guide service to find out where fish were, as they would, as my dear friend Travis Holman used to always say, when he was still alive, was we're out here burning dinosaurs, figuring it out. And no one burns dinosaurs anymore, right? Like, they're just not putting in the work. And so I understand the frustration from a fellow pro guide level of like, this is annoying. You just want the info. No one gave it to me. But that's also not true. Someone did give it to them. It was just another human being. It wasn't a device. Someone said, we're willing to welcome you in. Now, you had to prove it, right? Like, you had to put in the work. They had to catch an eye of you, like, oh, I see that young kid. He's doing it the right way. We're going to welcome him into our world and kind of show him some of the stuff we know. But you still got welcomed in. And it seems like there's nothing, for some people, there's nothing anyone can do that ever allows you to be qualified to be welcomed into their circle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your right. You can do that. But if that's 50% of the industry, don't come at me asking how to grow it. And by the way, we don't need to grow the industry, as I've said on this show 1,000 times.
We need to grow advocacy for the industry.
What we have to improve is our agency and power in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes from being more respectful people in general. We have to be respectful people in culture when we're not hunting, and we have to represent hunters as respectful people when we are hunting and when we're, you know, listen, if your Facebook profile picture is you in camo with your dog or an animal, like it or not, you now just became a spokesman for the hunting industry. And how you decide to behave on that platform and engage with other human beings is going to unfortunately reflect on the industry as a whole.
Yeah, and that's my take on people getting upset with other people. And I understand the point of people do scout and drive hundreds of miles and thousands of miles and put the work in. And but when you're coming off that way and you know, you put your guards up and then that you're, so now all of a sudden it has an adverse effect. And,
yeah.
And you know, another wall. Now it's two defenses coming up and just, there's no, I don't think there's room for it.
And there's just not a need. Like, you know, there used to be a time where you just wouldn't ask.
Yeah.
You know, like you could have a relationship. I see this a lot with other guides, like the real, and I'll speak to the fishing side. The real established, in my opinion, understand how the game should be played guys. They are friends with all other guides. They'll ask them how they did that day. You will rarely hear them ask them, where did you do it? That's the difference. You can still be supportive, and you can still be selective on the information you're willing to provide. But the guys that I ran around with coming up in this industry never asked. They didn't run up on a dude at the dock and be like, dude, looks like you had a great day. Where are you fishing today? Never. They'd be like, dude, great day. So stoked for you and your clients. Have a beer at the marina or whatever. And go on down the road. But it wasn't like searching for information. It wasn't trying to snipe a spot. It was just true camaraderie in the pursuit and the profession. And I don't know if that exists anymore.
It's such a weird place to be as an outdoorsman because, to your point, and I don't know the numbers. I'd like to see the numbers. We're told that duck hunting is down in terms of popularity, but you can't get away from people. You know, we used to go out as kids, and it was like, Josh, you made the comment, it's our turn. You don't even get a turn anymore. You've got to share your turn with 80 other trucks at the trailhead.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd love to know the data on how many people are actually out there doing that. Maybe we'll do some research before next week's show and have some of that. But the leave
don't
no
hold
trace.
Your breath. Don't hold your breath.
If this was a good show, we'd do it ahead of time, right? the leave no trace, the have your turn, leave it better than you found it, all of that, it almost doesn't apply today because you're not leaving it for the next person. You're sharing it with the person you're shoulder to shoulder with. And I think that we've lost a lot of that mutual respect. I didn't mean for this to be such a downer segment, but it all honestly is kind of saddening for the place we're at. It is such a beautiful resource. There is so much enjoyment and love and beauty to be found in the pursuit. You know, if we're just focusing on waterfowl or if it's fishing or whatever it is, just in the outdoors. And I do have high hopes for the future of outdoors men and these pursuits. It just feels like we're in our weird teenage years as an industry, and we got to sort some stuff out as a group.
So what I wonder, I've made this argument to some duck people before, but I'll use waterfowl lodges as an example because I think, again, going back to, it's one of the most controllable. It's hard to do this with upland. It's hard to do this with some of the other pursuits. It's just the success. Being successful is key to what I'm about to say. And so, like, I feel like waterfowl, you've got a little more. You're coming into that next morning traditionally with a lot more data, right? Whether that's a spot like Salt Creek, where you guys, it's set up that way. You got people there. You know how birds are coming in and out. Or you're an operation like Falco, where your staff is scouting birds every afternoon going into the evening. You literally know where they're going to be the next day if things, you know, unless some freak storm comes in or something, but you got a good idea. But, man, if I owned a waterfowl lodge or a location, I wonder what it would look like for at least a week of the season you took no paying customers. And all you did was you partnered with local 4-H groups, local shooting sports teams at high schools, and you said, we're bringing you into the fold to show you the industry. And you literally just welcome them in. And it is a week of sharing knowledge. It is a week of them being able to hunt. It's a week of them getting to see that, like, oh, there's a professional model here that I could pursue. Maybe you do find that pipeline of the next group of young guides that get to come to your company. Or maybe there's a kid who just gets eat up on the idea of being a dog trainer, and now we're finding the next generation of dog trainers. Or maybe there's a kid who's got an engineering mind, and he realizes, like, oh, you know what? There are some things that don't make sense with how this blind is built, and they become the next engineer for a manufacturer in the industry. But we say all these things that we want to do, and to me there seems like there's really actually pretty simple solutions to this. And it takes personal responsibility of the people who are leading the charge to say, hey, we're going to be the solution. And we're not going to depend on Delta Waterfowl or Ducks Unlimited or any of these other peoples to have their mentor programs. We are going to be the mentor program, and we are going to be a force that changes how people have opportunity. We're going to give them access that they didn't have before. I'm going to give them knowledge that potentially could be the seed that turns them into a professional in this industry. And, like, man, I would show up every day and volunteer my photography skills and whatever to support something like that.
Yeah, all call ducks. You know, like,
well, yeah, like whatever.
Whatever your
right?
skill set is, yeah, bring it.
I mean, you touched something huge there, and there's not very many things that it's so broad, that's so related, like you say, from engineers to biologists. And what else is like that, that there's so many different facets of duck hunting in general? I mean, Dustin at 737, you know, they got started because they were, he was turning calls on a lathe.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, so you got carpenters, like, I guess, and then, you know, just... Then that's another thing I like about it. You know, there's so many different aspects, and no matter what you're into, something probably in waterfowl can grab your attention.
Yeah, and then you have the camaraderie aspect. Like, you know, I've said this numerous times, and I'm not gonna say the name I have in my brain for it, but like. The duck blind is a unique place, and it is a chapel of its own, and it's one of the few outdoor supports pursuits that allows the old and the young to be together. If you're an elk hunter, there is a day that comes when you're no longer ridge hunting. You just can't do it. If you're a fly fisherman, there's a day that comes where you can't get into that section of the river anymore. And so time creates division in a lot of our outdoor sports. except for duck hunting. And it's also a place, because of the nature of the concealment of hunting out of blinds, that is welcoming to a child whose attention span can't go that long, whose needs for staying warm can be met by buddy heaters.
Exactly.
Right? Who can be given the things that they need so that they're having an enjoyable experience. And those things we hear, you've got a young kid. The things my kids hear me say that I don't know they hear me say is unbelievable. And to just be in a room or in a space where they get to overhear the conversations that happen. Maybe some duck blinds they don't need to be in. But for the most part, it is where growth, where the roadmap to what it means to become the type of human that I think we want to raise our children as, it's established there. And it's this very short time window in a year where I just, and maybe I've romanticized a duck blind too much, no. But I have this unbelievable respect for that space. It is a sacred space in my mind where unique things can happen that cannot happen anywhere else. And we've got to do a better job of getting more people into that church, if you will.
Yeah.
And getting them in the right church, right? And just letting them listen.
Yeah, and to go to that point, my boy's 7 years old, and he is all there, 100 miles an hour. You know, taking him deer hunting, yeah, he's good for an hour, and then, you know, I want my iPad, and we don't do screen time. But if that's what it takes to get him in the deer blind, I give it to him. In the duck blind, no, it never gets mentioned. And the guys that hunt with me are like almost like my brothers, you know, and like uncles to him. And so I got a picture on my phone. He's just holding his duck and talking to everybody. And I got one buddy down there putting face paint on my boy. And he has the best time ever in there. And it gets him excited, you know. And
there's something really special about a carefully curated group of adult influences on your kids that aren't mom and dad. And I think that the outdoors, by and large, is a great vehicle and environment for that. And I think the duck blind, especially in a small, acute sense, is one of the best places for that kind of shepherding.
Yeah, and it's any of it, right? I mean, I just had this an opportunity out on this last shoot I was on. One of our editors brought his girlfriend with her, a woman named Kylie, and she's a photographer for Patagonia. She's a climber and does climbing photography, like big wall, gnarly stuff, I'm pretty sure. But, you know, she has like something crazy, like 40,000 Instagram followers. And she's just this absolutely gnarly little human who does super rad stuff. And like she has a tribe of people, right, who are similar to her, who I think in the climbing and the mountain biking and the space that they spend more time in, the same deal, right? It's those moments where they get to pass on the way that they think, the way that they feel you should approach the world. But, man, there's just so much time in between shooting and a duck blind that, man, I'm just never going to pass up a chance to sit down with another human being in a duck blind.
Let's go shoot some ducks.
Heck yeah.
Let's do it. Hey, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us this week. Love to have you back. Tell some stories. Do you have any social media handles or anything like that you want to drop for us to promote? You can find me online at @T_Maples. Joshua Wildman Stratton, as always, is @Against_Current on Instagram. You can follow the show page on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter @Outdoor_Hour. How about you?
Yeah, so I'm just Taylor_K_T. So on Instagram. And then I post a little bit on there, and we're supposed to be getting a TikTok pretty soon. So
cool. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us, man.
Well, thank you.
Enjoyed getting some of your insight. Yep. We got to have you back again.
Heck yeah.
So this is the Outdoor Hour. Thanks for being with us this week. Drop us a note. If you've got a part of the conversation you'd like to continue on social media, you can find us there. Love to hear your thoughts on some of the topics we've discussed in the waterfowl and outdoor worlds in today's episode. Until next time, go boldly. We'll see you outdoors.